This is Understanding Israel-Palestine. Every week, this program interviews journalists, activists, policy analysts, scholars, and others about the Israeli occupation and the U.S. support for it. The views expressed on the program are those of the host and guests and do not necessarily reflect those of the radio station or anyone associated with it. It is our hope that this episode and every episode furthers Understanding Israel-Palestine. I am Jamie Jackson, your host for this episode, as we explore the controversy around the Mapping Project, a publication that sparked extensive controversy immediately after it went live on June 3rd. The Mapping Project identifies and maps hundreds of policing institutions, universities, weapons manufacturers, and explicitly political Zionist organizations in the Boston area, in an effort to identify the interconnectedness of systems and oppression. The Mapping Project asserts that these organizations collaborate with one another to further systems of oppression, including militarism, colonialism, and Zionism. From those organizations that wholly support Zionism and Israel as a Jewish state, the responses to the Mapping Project were uniform and predictable, calling it anti-Semitic. From those activists and organizations who acknowledged the detrimental role of Zionism in the oppression of Palestinians, there was a range of views, with numerous organizations declaring their support, while others expressed reservations. Earlier this week, I spoke with Dr. Nora Lester-Murad, whose recent article in the online publication MondoWise argued that the Mapping Project, while not anti-Semitic, was nevertheless, quote, destructive activism. Nora Lester-Murad is a writer, educator, and activist. She co-authored Rest in My Shade, A Poem About Roots, and edited I Found Myself in Palestine, Stories of Love and Renewal from Around the Globe. Coming from a Jewish American family, Nora married a Palestinian Muslim and raised three daughters in the West Bank. She posts her writing at www.noralestermurad.com. Later in the episode, we hear my March conversation with Charlotte Cates, International Coordinator of Samadun Palestinian Prisoner Solidarity Network, an international network of organizers and activists working to build solidarity with Palestinian prisoners in their struggle for freedom. Samadun posted its support for the Mapping Project, along with the names of other organizations who are in support. We turn now to my conversation with Nora Lester-Murad. Nora Lester-Murad, welcome to Understanding Israel-Palestine. Thank you so much for joining us. If you wanted to tell somebody about the Mapping Project and your response to it, how would you start?
Oh, yeah, and it's hard. I think I would start by saying that a lot of us are not single issue people. Trying to place U.S. foreign policy, militarized policy anywhere in the world, kind of imperialism, pro-Israel policy in the context of other kinds of harm, it's logical, it's important. Because we're not single issue people, and because these forces do work in tandem. The most obvious one, which the Mapping Project does address, is the relationship between pro-Israel activities and organizations and policing. This is a super obvious one because there's literally relationships between the pro-Israeli organizations like the ADL and the U.S. police. ADL and other U.S. Zionist organizations take police officers from our local police departments, including in my city, on trips to Israel where they are trained in certain kinds of policing, anti-terrorism, other kinds of skills and tactics, which is troubling for anyone who cares about Palestinians, because what Israel is doing with those skills and tactics is to oppress Palestinians. So the idea that my local police department is going to learn from these military occupiers' tactics that they're going to come back and use in my own town, that's horrifying. That relationship, which some people call deadly exchange, is not new to people in the movement, but it is new to people outside the movement. They may not have the information they need to understand how, particularly the ADL has, the Anti-Defamation League has, now what words can we use here, works with in a very long-term institutional way with the police. That is an important and true thing that the Mapping Project is attempting to do, which is also worth doing. I think that there are deeper aspects to that relationship that aren't able to be well represented within something like the Mapping Project. And of course, any kind of format or presentation is going to have its limitations. It'll bring certain things forward and push certain other things to the back. But to give you an example, one thing that gets said over and over and over that is rarely challenged, maybe never challenged, is anti-Semitism is increasing exponentially. If you ask me, I would tell you I believe that's true. I believe that's true because racism and hatred is increasing exponentially. So I believe it to be true. But the data that they use to substantiate that claim is based very much on ADL and police data. And this is a problem. Why? Because the ADL has a big infrastructure for not just receiving complaints from Jews about anti-Semitism or perceived anti-Semitism, but they go out and request and solicit that information. So there's this big institution that can pull in instances of anti-Semitism, and that doesn't exist in other communities. So when they make the case that hatred or incidents of bias or hatred against Jews is the biggest or the fastest growing type of religious discrimination, where does anybody who's not Jewish go to report these things? Where do you go? You go to the FBI. Do you know what the FBI has done to Muslims, to African Americans, to other people of color? Other people don't run to the FBI to report hate incidents against them. They're half the time coming from the FBI itself. So the ADL and the FBI are using the same FBI hate crime stats to claim something that then they use to justify all kinds of other things. And this is a problem, but I don't think the Mapping Project, maybe they weren't trying to do that, but they certainly did not do that. They looked at the relationships between the ADL and police on one level, but all the other deeper levels, which are very important, are not well expressed in that format. I assume that what they were trying to do is something extremely important, which is to map, to visualize, and then expose the connections between different forces, organizations that are holding this hegemonic narrative, pro-Zionist, pro-Israel narrative in place, so that we can challenge it in an effective way. I assume that they were trying to do this very, very hard thing that has to be done super carefully, and they didn't do it carefully. But if that was the intention, which I don't know, but if that was the intention, I think it's very important, extremely important, maybe the most important work we need to be doing right now.
I would like for you to have a chance to explain why you think it's actually harmful.
So as I think I said in the article, there's a ton of information in there. And it's meticulously documented. So somebody put in a lot of really, really good work. And then sometimes they draw a conclusion from that data that may be a true conclusion, but not from that data. And it's weak. Now, does everything have to be perfect? No, it doesn't. But anybody could have anticipated not just that there would be a big backlash, but the actual content of the backlash, right? This accusation of anti-Semitism is like a gun with a really, really big barrel. You know, wherever they point it, there's like a whole bunch of damage. It just
scattershot.
They wield it very haphazardly, very casually. So I think, like I said, I don't think we could have prevented the backlash, but drawing those conclusions from that data in that way opens it up to not just the pro-Israeli voices, but to thoughtful, regular people to say, wait a second, are you, alleging a kind of a conspiracy theory? Are you trying to put data around Jews control everything narrative? I think it just leaves itself open for reasonable people to wonder what the intention of it is. And because they're anonymous, and because they didn't line up their support before they released it, it put someone like me in a position of saying, I either could support them or I could support the project. I can't support them because I don't know who they are. You know, when I support people, even when they make mistakes, I support them because I know who they are. I know they have integrity. I know they have a track record. And then they must make mistakes. I'm going to support them anyway, right? I can't support these people because I don't know who they are. I can't support the project because it's not good enough. It doesn't stand on its own. So I think my main concern, and in a way it's maybe petty, but the analysis is not well supported by the data in many, many cases. That's number one. Number two, in trying to be comprehensive, they included, I think, too broad of a range of actors. Again, not necessarily wrong. I believe that the Jewish disability rights organization, over here near me in the suburbs, probably does. I believe that they have relationships with Israel. I believe their activities promote the Zionist narrative at the expense of Palestinians. I believe that that's true. But why put them on there? It adds nothing and opens yourself up to all, not to attack, you're already going to get attacked. It opens you up to people who want to support you, seeing the legitimacy of the attacks, right? When you have organizations on a map, which I don't know why I put it on a map, because the fact that it's on High Street or By Street is not significant to the relationships between these organizations. But when you do list these different organizations, it makes it kind of look equivalent, right? So the ADL is on there, and the Israeli consulate is on there, and then this Jewish high school is on there, and this disability rights organization is on there. And those four are not equal. They're not equal in their influence. They're not equal in their strategic importance to the movement. So I think it would have been far more effective if they would have not tried to be so inclusive, been a little bit more selective about who gets on the map, and then more rigorous about drawing the conclusions that they do draw from the data points on the map. I feel like those of us in the movement have made great effort and have been very intentional about distinguishing between Zionism and Judaism, between Zionists and Jews. First of all, there are a lot of Zionists that are not Jewish. Their Christian Zionism is a very big and important part of the pro-Israel lobby and community, but also not all Jews. I'm Jewish, I'm not Zionist. So not all Jews are Zionists, not all Zionists are Jews. The reason to keep those separate is because Israel and its allies are trying to conflate them. And for that reason, we must keep them separate. They're trying to claim that support for Israel and Israel itself is essential to Jewish identity and to Jewish existence. They're trying to say that if you criticize Israel, you're criticizing Jews. Because they're doing that, we must be super careful not to do that. We must make every effort to distinguish between Zionism and Judaism. Zionism is a political position that supports not only the state of Israel, but the state of Israel as a Jewish state. And while some people and people that I know and love think that there's a kind of a idealistic Zionism that could someday exist, what we are focused on right now is the actual Zionism that exists on the ground in Israel, which on a daily basis is arresting Palestinians, kicking Palestinians out of their home, stealing Palestinian lands, denying Palestinian equal access to mobility, to healthcare, to education, etc. I think it's so important that we distinguish. And I think
that let me ask you, do you think that in any way the mapping project is blurring that?
Yeah.
How so?
Well, I think,
can you just give me maybe one example of how you think that they've conflated Zionism and Judaism or the Jewish community with the Zionists?
Let me correct myself. I don't think they conflated. I think they missed an opportunity to disentangle those, like the Jewish high school that's on the map. I completely believe that Jewish high school is promoting Zionism and pro-Israeli activism, et cetera. I believe it 1,000%. The Jewish high school is conflating. So if we're going to put the Jewish high school on the map, I think we have to be so explicit that it's on the map because of its Zionism and not because it's Jewish. So again, it's not the mapping project necessarily that is conflating. It's their failure to disentangle what we know is already conflated that plays into their narrative. I don't know. This is what I think.
Well, you have done an excellent job of explaining your hesitations, your reservations about the project. Is there anything further you want to add before we close?
I think that we all need to barrel forward in a principled way. Try not to get derailed by this, and you know, continue to build the movement in a way that has integrity with a focus on liberation and equality, and not allow ourselves to be used by those Zionist forces to build their narrative. It's such a dangerous narrative. This narrative that anti-Semitism is everywhere, it's always been, it will never be minimized in any way, and therefore the only thing a decent human being can do is to support Israel unconditionally. You know, that's just dangerous. The message I would like, and that I try to convey through not just through my activism, but through my writing, through my books, through my teaching, and just hopefully in the way I live my life, is that everybody's liberation is wrapped up with everybody else's liberation. And that's something that I learn again and again from Black radical feminists. And so it's not about, you know, pro-Palestinian or pro-Israeli. It's about pro-liberation or anti-liberation. That's the fight we're fighting. It's a fight over the narrative. So I guess that's the only thing that I would leave with is if anybody listening to this feels like, oh my God, this is too complicated, I might say the wrong thing, maybe I don't understand the nuances, so I shouldn't take a position, I just want to say, please do not self-censor yourself. Because anyone who steps back out of fear of doing something wrong or out of fear of being criticized, like the way I'm criticizing, you know, it's not something to be scared of. My goodness, I've been criticized. I'll continue to be criticized. But if anyone self-censors themselves, it leaves the airspace to those who already have a clear political intention, which is to continue the conflict.
Well, Nora Lester Murad, thank you so much for joining with us and sharing your expertise. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much.
You have been listening to my conversation with Dr. Nora Lester Murad, writer, educator, and activist. We now hear from Charlotte Cates, a Palestinian rights activist who fully supports the Mapping Project.
Charlotte Cates is the international coordinator of Samadun Palestinian Prisoners Solidarity Network. Charlotte Cates, welcome to Understanding Israel-Palestine.
Thank you so much for the invitation.
Let's begin with the word Samadun. As I understand it, it means those who are steadfast. Talk about how Palestinian prisoners are exemplary of steadfastness.
Exactly, yes. The name of our organization is a message of salute to the Palestinian prisoners, to those who are steadfast behind bars every day. Right now, there are over 4,600 Palestinian prisoners locked up in Israeli jails. And since 1948, all estimates indicate that over 1 million Palestinians have passed through the Israeli colonial prison system. And we see that the Israeli occupation uses imprisonment as a method of colonial oppression of the Palestinian people. It's an attempt to undermine Palestinian resistance, to separate Palestinians from one another, and to deprive Palestinians of the most effective leaders in their community. So when we ask the question, who are the Palestinian prisoners? They're teachers and students and workers and farmers. They're community organizers and women's organizers and labor union organizers. They're resistance leaders and freedom fighters. And in some cases, they are children who are simply living their Palestinian lives in their villages or throwing a stone at the soldiers that come to make their lives miserable. Palestinian prisoners are women and men and children and elders, and really encompass the broad spectrum of Palestinian society. They come from all political backgrounds. And there's been a concerted effort to demonize Palestinian prisoners as terrorists, when in reality, we're speaking about massive political imprisonment attempting to destroy Palestinian existence and reality. But behind bars, despite these circumstances, despite the fact that over 90% of Palestinian prisoners are subjected to some form of physical or psychological torture by Israeli interrogators, which has been legitimized by the Israeli High Court under the pretext of so-called moderate physical pressure, despite this fact, Palestinian prisoners continue to organize behind bars. They, in the words of many prisoners, they turn the jails into schools of resistance, and they teach one another, read together, continue to organize, carry out hunger strikes and protests and organizing. In fact, as we speak today, there are over 500 administrative detainees, Palestinians jailed without charge or trial, who have been engaged for 44 days in a boycott of the Israeli military courts, which will escalate to a collective hunger strike if the Israeli occupation does not meet the demands of the prisoners to end this unjust and arbitrary form of detention.
Let's elaborate a little bit about administrative detention. I know that there are a sizable number, as you're saying, of the prisoners who are there under the administrative detention, which doesn't provide them with the charges against them, the evidence against them, and how long they're going to be there.
Well, you're absolutely right. Administrative detention is a blatant violation of international law, particularly in the way that the Israeli occupation uses it. Israeli administrative detention is used as a systematic method of targeting Palestinians when even in the military courts, which convict over 99% of the Palestinians brought before them, the Israeli occupation doesn't even believe that they can convict them there. And so they use administrative detention, which allows a military commander to order a Palestinian jailed for up to 6 months at a time with no charge, no trial, on the basis of a so-called secret file or secret evidence, which is denied not only to the prisoner, him or herself, but to their lawyer. And so there's no way of fighting back against these charges. There's no way to really appeal in any meaningful way. This is why the administrative detainees are currently carrying out this boycott, because the military courts are nothing but a rubber stamp. And even the high courts in the Israeli occupation regime are nothing but a rubber stamp for these administrative detention orders. Now, it's also important to note here that while the orders themselves range from 1 to 6 months at a time, they're indefinitely renewable. And so Palestinian administrative detainees never know when or if they are going to be released. In many occasions, the orders to renew administrative detention comes days or even hours before they were scheduled to be released, when their families and friends were waiting to welcome them and welcome them with a reception to their homes. Instead, they learned that their loved one will be locked away for another 4 months, another 6 months, another 5 months. And there's no ending of when this is going to take place. So it's also a form of collective punishment and psychological torture against the detainee, him or herself, and their family, because everybody is forced to live in a constant state of never knowing when they will be able to plan for their future.
Talk about what Samadoun does.
Samadoun, you know, we have a collective leadership, a collective way of organizing, and we are an international Arab and Palestinian organization. Cities, on campuses, in communities around the world, as well as creating reports, documentation, and information to provide material and resources for the Palestine Solidarity Movement in order to free Palestinian political prisoners. We know that the Palestinian political prisoners deserve to be recognized everywhere around the world as true leaders who are being locked behind bars. Many times people will say, where is the Palestinian Nelson Mandela? The reality is that there are over 4,600 Nelson Mandelas who, just like Mandela himself, are locked behind bars by the Israeli occupation. And so we seek to campaign to raise awareness and build a strong level of popular support everywhere around the world to boycott and isolate Israel, to demand the freedom of Palestinian political prisoners and the freedom of Palestine. And we think this is very important because the Palestinian political prisoners represent true leadership of the Palestinian people without corruption and without injustice and without, you know, compromise with injustice that have been locked away because of their effectiveness. And the Palestinian prisoners represent the resistance and organizing of the Palestinian people. And so it's very important that every single one of their stories and lives are known. Leaders like Ahmed Saadat and Hitam Safin and Marwan Barghouti, to the 14-year-old child or the 80-year-old man whose stories we might not all know, but who we deserve to know, who continue to be denied their freedom due to the Israeli occupation. And we invite people to visit our website at samidoun.net, that's samidoun.net, to get involved, find a chapter in your area. We have chapters in the United States, Canada, France, Sweden, Germany, Greece, occupied Palestine, and a number of other countries. So if you visit our website, you can get connected with your local chapter or contact us about starting a chapter yourself or getting involved in other ways, like through social media activity or by helping to build the activities that your organization is already doing to include Palestinian prisoners in their struggle.
You have been listening to Charlotte Cates, International Coordinator of Samadoun Palestinian Prisoner Solidarity Network. Join us again next week for another episode of Understanding Israel-Palestine.